Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the stresses of the medical field are well known, but doctors are not supposed to crumble under pressure or succumb to wild swings of emotion, and yet they're human too. Our next guest has written a book about the emotional give and take between doctors and patients. She is a doctor at New York's Bellevue Hospital, teaches at the NYU School of Medicine, and is the author now of What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Dr. Danielle Ofri is that author and doctor. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
And I want to start off actually by inviting listeners who are doctors to call in on this topic. Do you detach yourself from your emotions while tending to your patients? Do you outwardly empathize with your patients? How do you process your own feelings during difficult cases? Doctors, medical students especially invited or also especially invited? What are they teaching you? Do they deal with this in medical education? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And you have a story near the start of the book that takes place when you're a first-year medical student. It's of a rape victim you're supposed to counsel, and you're afraid to approach her after you see a cockroach crawl out of her clothes. Can you tell us the rest of that story?
Well, I was approaching this patient. I was a medical student with really no experience, and she was a homeless patient and was powerfully malodorous. And then when a cockroach crawled out of her clothing, I was nauseated beyond belief, and I hid. I backed away and hid behind a desk, afraid to approach her and not sure what to do. And then a nurse aide came by, a Haitian woman, walked over, put her arm around the patient, and started to speak to her very gently. Come, let's get you cleaned up. I'll get you some clean clothes. And I watched her help the patient up, walk her to the side, murmuring softly. And I knew she was smelling that same powerful odor, yet she was able to get beyond that and give of herself to the patient. And I thought that was my first and most powerful lesson in empathy.
Empathy. So in the book, you write that medical schools teach students to keep their emotions in check, that emotions cloud judgment or get in the way of productivity. Do they teach that explicitly?
Well, there's two parts of the education. There is the explicit curriculum that talks about professionalism and doctor-patient communication. But I think when students get out into the real world of medicine, there's the hidden curriculum that they pick up on how doctors really behave, and much of what they've learned about is dispensed with in the efficiency and realities of medical care.
Some of what you write in the book has to do with humor, and that you understand why doctors turn to a kind of gallows humor to deal with difficult circumstances, but the jokes and the stereotypes are often not very kind, and this widens the gap between doctors and patients.
Humor is a fascinating topic, and it's always present. And I believe that there's a reason for it. I think it's a way that we can access our emotions, not always the most appropriate way, because you're right, it often is at the expense of patients. And there are interesting rules for humor. It's okay, quote unquote, to joke about patients who are drug addicts or alcoholics, but not okay to joke about children or people with cancer.
Well, you're not joking about any of these patients to them,
no,
right?
No, only behind the scenes.
Give us an example.
Well, I had an example in the book where I was in the psychiatric waiting room of Bellevue Hospital, also a very powerfully smelly place. And I was, again, overcome by the odor. I was a beginning medical student. And when I stepped away with my resident, he said to me, oh, don't worry, it's just toxic shock syndrome, which was a play on toxic shock syndrome. I found that so funny, even though I knew it was derogatory toward our patient. But somehow it released my tension. And after that, I was able to approach the patient and not be overwhelmed by the smell. And in fact, it enabled me to see the smell as a sign of vulnerability, that I needed to enhance my empathy. So it did assist me in a way.
And gallows humor, if you want to call it that, is a coping mechanism. Doctors do it, soldiers do it, journalists do it when we deal with death and bad news all the time. But do you think that it somehow actually emotionally distances you from those patients in a way that negatively affects your practice and their health?
I think it ultimately does. And I think there are actually better ways to deal with the emotions, but often there aren't mechanisms available, so people resort to gallows humor. I think in a better world that the supervising doctors and nurses would demonstrate more appropriate avenues to handle powerful emotions.
Doctors, medical students, can we hear from you on how you deal with your emotions and whether you think your feelings have an impact on your patient's health? Maybe it's not as paranormal as it sounds. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Lena in Westchester, you're on the air. Hi, Lena.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for such a sharply relevant program. A couple of thoughts and then a question. Basically, doctor is still a human, and to shut down emotions, frankly, is not possible. They are there, and we have immediate reaction. The question is to what extent we're showing this and how it is useful to the patient to show compassion, understanding, and yet not to go too much of an emotional sphere and to attack the real issue. The point, number one, is that unfortunately the psychology of the communication is not taught well enough in the medical institutions. It's not taught enough in any other institutions, and became more and more prevalent because the internet, unfortunately, creates that separation and brings this very sterile technical communication, which the patients take as a threat.
Yes.
And the medical care system, where doctor, especially just a regular doctor, spends such a limited amount with the patients, cut off completely this human communication.
And yes, and Lena, I'm going to leave it there. And you've made some very important points. And Dr. Ofri, I think, when she talks about the threat that patients feel just by doctors trying to not emotionally engage too much, it's supposed to be neutral, but it comes off as a threat oftentimes.
Well, the question is, do we really want it to be neutral? I mean, you could type your symptoms into a computer and get a diagnosis spit out, but I think most of us wouldn't find ourselves cared for. I think we'd prefer a human with the emotions. I mean, when there is a serious illness, a grave diagnosis, you would like your caregiver to show some emotion that this is sad, not to be incapacitated, but to understand that this must be very painful.
Naomi in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I'm a psychiatrist. I work in New York. I'm a child psychiatrist, but I trained in both pediatrics and in psychiatry.
You're a ringer. You're already dealing in feelings.
What's that?
I said you're a ringer. You're already dealing in feelings. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
And so with regards to this question, in psychiatry, we actually call this process of what the doctor feels for the patient counter transference. So that's a psychoanalytical term that used to mean what the doctor feels toward the patient. And
yes.
And we're taught, you know, in the field of psychiatry, we're taught very much about it and how to use it and how to, rather than to shut it down, which I think is maybe what more in sort of like this the medical side of it versus the emotional feeling part, which maybe many medical doctors have, or maybe the way that medicine is being taught hasn't caught up with yet. They try to suppress that a little bit. We're taught in psychiatry more to try to understand it, certainly not act out on it in any way that wouldn't go along with what
right.
the ethics of what you're trying
I think
to
you make a really central point. And interestingly, most of the doctors calling up to be on the board right now are psychiatrists. And then there are some non-MD psychologists calling in. So we see who this is tapping into, who feel comfortable actually talking about it. But to Naomi's point, you know, psychologists and social workers, and I guess psychiatrists, get supervision, emotional counseling to help them deal with the feelings that their encounters with patients and clients provoke, this transference, counter-transference, the whole thing. Do you think regular MDs should do that, too, with the amount of illness and suffering and death that they encounter every day?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the places in which medical education is changing. 20 years ago, there was no room for this, no thought. You know, a patient died, the next patient came, and you just kept going. And I think now we're getting a little bit more sophisticated that for young trainees, for example, when you face death a lot, there is a trauma. There is genuine grief. And if you don't deal with it at some point, it will come back to haunt you.
But it's not standard practice, is it, for cardiologists, for oncologists, doctors who deal with a lot of death?
No. It's in some places, oncologists are paying a little more attention to this and having some ongoing sessions to acknowledge the patients who have died. But it's not a standard across-the-board thing yet.
And even if a doctor is emotionally sensitive to their patients and pretty in touch, does it matter what a doctor feels in private to the outcome for a patient? Like if a doctor likes a patient or doesn't like a patient, likes their work, this doctor, or hates it, has an optimistic outlook on life or a pessimistic one in general, does this matter to me as a patient?
I think it actually does. I mean, one would want to think that every doctor is standardized like your airline pilot. But it's not the same because we're dealing with people on both ends of the stethoscope. And while I think that most doctors are able to put their emotions enough aside to do a competent job, for example, a doctor who hates their job, it's hard to imagine they'll do as good a job as someone who loves what they're doing and is very enthusiastic.
Laura in Purchase, you're on WNYC. Hi, Laura.
Hi there. How are you?
Okay.
Good. When I was a senior at Carnegie Mellon, I was an acting student back in the 80s, and I was right up the street from the University of Pittsburgh. As a way to make a little extra money, I actually took on the job of being a simulated patient. So I had to learn a whole role of a patient, and then I would be brought in. There was a five-week course for these medical students to actually learn empathy and to learn how to hold hands and sort of be there emotionally. And the first week, doctor of the course would come in, and I was told to be difficult. The teacher pulled me aside and said, be very difficult. And they handled me in a certain way, and the medical student was like, time out. And by the fifth week, they knew exactly how to speak with me. They were actually taught empathy and how to make the patient feel better. I think it's such a valuable
experience. That's great. What med school was that?
This was University of Pittsburgh.
Huh. So, Dr. Ofri, we have about a minute left. And Laura, thank you. Is that kind of training done routinely? Is that the kind of model that you're proposing?
It is increasingly done. I think the real teaching is the supervising doctors walking the walk more than talking the talk, showing in their everyday behavior how we connect with patients and respect their emotions and ours.
What do you hope comes of this book?
I hope that people at least become aware that emotions are a reality in the doctor-patient connection. It's two human beings, and although you may want to ignore it, it's still there and it will play a role.
Even though it's, when you see a lot of disease and death, normal, right? Unless you're trained for many people, to clamp down on personal feelings while treating the patient.
But I think we have to, again, put our feelings aside enough so that we don't take away from the patient's centrality of the encounter. But if your patient has died, you need a moment to grieve. You are human.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks to our callers, and thanks to our guest, Dr. Danielle Ofri. Her new book is out now, What Doctors Feel, How Emotions Affect the Practice of Medicine. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Mara on WNYC.